Today's episode is brought to you by the Clackamas County Fair and Rodeo, everything a county fair was meant to be. Coming to you August 16th through 20th, only in Canby. Tickets and information at clackamascountyfair.com or download the new app on Google Play or the Apple App Store. This episode is also brought to you by Oddmo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Order today at 503-263-8444 or visit them online at oddmos.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Martina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. An excessive heat warning by the National Weather Service is in effect for Canby and the greater Portland metro area through Thursday this week, with dangerously hot conditions and temperatures of 98 to 103 predicted. Ahead of the oncoming thermal onslaught, county and state health officials have compiled and released a list of tips for keeping family, neighbors, pets, and yourself cool safely. The Canby Adult Center and Canby Public Library are open to the public as cooling centers during regular business hours. Canby's Denny's Restaurant, which is open 24/7, also operates as a cooling center whenever temperatures are dangerously high, with no obligation to buy. Residents who do not have access to cool places are encouraged to visit a center to avoid the heat and relax. For more information about shelters, transportation, or other resources, visit clackamas.us/relief or call 211. In general, when the thermometer reaches the 90s or higher, all Oregonians should drink more water than usual, don't wait until you are thirsty, and avoid alcohol and sugary drinks. To cool off, consider taking a cool shower or bath, or use air conditioning or a fan. But don't use a fan to blow extremely hot air on yourself. This can lead to heat exhaustion. Also, wear lightweight and loose clothing. Avoid using your stove or oven, and avoid going outside during the hottest part of the day from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. If you must be out in the heat, limit your outdoor activity to morning and evening hours and rest in shady areas as often as possible. Know that the heat index plays a role. When sweat isn't able to evaporate from the body due to high humidity, the body has difficulty regulating its temperature and cooling itself off. This can result in heat exhaustion, cramps, and heat stroke. When possible, residents should also check in on elders and vulnerable neighbors, including parents of babies and toddlers, people taking mental health medications, and those with heart disease or high blood pressure. Never leave a person, child, or a pet in a hot car. Temperatures inside a car can soar quickly to dangerous levels, even if the outside temperature is in the 70s. Leave your pet at home during warm or hot weather. PGE has also shared some tips on staying cool, as well as conserving energy amid the blistering heat wave. First, take advantage of cooler outdoor air by opening windows during cooler nights and mornings and using fans to draw cool air in. Keep your house shaded by closing curtains, drapes, or blinds on sun-facing windows, and using awnings during the day and when running AC units. Prevent heat from building up inside by saving showers, laundry, and dishwashing for cooler morning or evening hours. And use window air conditioning efficiently by keeping window units running until the air cools enough outside to open the windows or use a portable fan. In any heat-related emergency, call 911. For non-emergency matters, call 503-655-8211. One driver was killed and the other seriously injured in a two-vehicle crash on Sconce Road, south of Canby, a week ago Saturday. Clackamas County Sheriff's deputies responded to a report of a head-on traffic crash at approximately 5:30 p.m. Saturday, July 16th, in the 8800 block of Sconce Road, near the intersection with Canby-Markham Highway and the Smyrna United Church of Christ. Deputies say a maroon SUV and a white van were involved. Both drivers were transported by Life Flight to a local area hospital. The driver of the van, a 46-year-old man, died at the hospital. The driver of the SUV, a 20-year-old man, was hospitalized with critical injuries. Law enforcement declined to identify the drivers at this time, citing the active investigation. Criminal Reconstruction and Forensic Technicians, CRAFT, also responded to document the scene. Sadly, yet another fatal incident was reported in Clackamas County this week, in which two teenagers were killed in a single-vehicle crash that happened early Wednesday morning near Sandy. Deputies, along with Clackamas fire crews, responded to a crash at 4 a.m. Wednesday in the 41800 block of Southeast Wildcat Mountain Drive. Deputies arrived to the scene and found a white truck with heavy damage. The preliminary investigation revealed that the truck left the roadway and crashed into a tree. The sheriff's office said speed is believed to be a factor. The two occupants in the truck, ages 15 and 17, were pronounced dead at the scene. Their names have not yet been released. No additional details have been released by the sheriff's office at this time, and the investigation is ongoing. A Happy Valley woman who was reported missing on Wednesday was found dead later that day near the area in Clackamas where she was last seen, according to the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. According to the original Sheriff's Office report, 46-year-old Amy Jean Mira was last seen around 4 p.m. on Tuesday, July 19th, near the intersection of Southeast Sunnyside Road and Valley View Terrace, southwest of Happy Valley. She was reportedly wearing a long black dress and black shoes. Mira was reported missing and endangered, and the sheriff's office asked anyone who saw her to call or text 911. Around 8 p.m. on Wednesday, searchers found Mira's body in a field near the 11200 block of Sunnyside Road, which is a Clackamas address. Deputies said this is very near to where she was last seen on Tuesday afternoon. Mira's body was taken to the Oregon State Medical Examiner's Office for an autopsy, and an investigation is underway to determine the cause of death. She had been reported missing after she failed to report to work on Wednesday, the sheriff's office said. Anyone with more information that can help investigators piece together Mira's location and activities leading up to July 20th is asked to submit it to the sheriff's office tip line by phone at 503-723-4949. The newly revived Canby Arts Association celebrated its 40th year with a new festival showcasing art in all of its forms this weekend, and all indications were that they have it hit out of the park, literally. The inaugural Through the Looking Glass Art Festival at Waite Park featured nearly 30 booths promoting local arts and authors, as well as a full day of stage entertainment, including an astonishing variety of music, street magic by local illusionist Scott Anderson, and live performances by Canby Community Theater. The culinary arts were also in full display, courtesy Wayward Sandwiches, Oddmo's Pizza, and Claudia's Kitchen, serving up themed food and drinks throughout the day. Kids' activities included a bouncy house, make and take art, face painting, balloon animals, and a photo booth. The inaugural celebration took place Saturday, but for the astute downtown visitor, signs of the imminent fete had already been popping up in the week prior on the sidewalks surrounding Canby's Central Park. Megan Waterman, owner of the Book Nook and member of the board of directors for the Canby Arts Association, explained that the faux rabbit prints are a bit of viral marketing by chalk artist extraordinaire Emra Nation, whose work often graces the walls of the Graham Building outside the Art-O-Matic. The chalk prints were designed to lead visitors to Waite Park, Waterman said. Visitors to the park on Saturday were greeted with the full range of Nation's talents, including a piece celebrating the inaugural festival, as well as ones depicting scenes from the classic tale, Alice in Wonderland. Local author and Canby current co-founder Tyler Clausen manned one of the booths, showcasing his latest work, The Penny Litch, a fantasy sitcom, and hosting interviews for his literary podcast, Between Lewis and Lovecraft, with co-host Hannah Ray Lambert. Other featured artists, crafters, and authors include Allison Seeger, Tamara Scott, Susan Woodworth, Rhoda Bohr, Joanne Brown, Jaquir Orr, Sarah Kraft, Bailey Litzy, Sherry Walsh, Ken Buckles, Krista Davis, Daniel Cooper, Kathy Rowe, and many others. For photos, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Canby Current.
Hey, Tyler! We have a furry new friend I wanted to show you. His name is Frankie with an I-E. Isn't that cute?
Oh, I get it, because you're Frankie with a C-K-E.
Yeah.
That's so clever.
I know.
The only cute thing I see on this video is me, because you're blurry and frozen.
What? No way. I just got a new phone, and it's supposed to have a great camera.
Dude, you can have the best camera in the world, but you still freeze up if your video calls don't have quality internet.
So what should I do? Frankie's playing in the pool and it's absolutely adorable.
I'm guessing you're using your mobile data for this FaceTime call, right? Just connect to your home Wi-Fi instead. I bet your video comes through just fine. You did just upgrade to direct link with Wi-Fi and fast upload speeds, so you might as well get the best use out of them.
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay, hang on. There. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I should be on my Wi-Fi now.
Yep.
Can you see Frankie in the pool?
Oh, he looks like he's having a blast. See what fast upload speeds can do? For upload and downloads at the speed of visit www.directlink.coop/internet or give him a call at 503-266-8111.
Frankie, give me back my phone.
I'm Roz Mason. I'm running for Oregon Senate District 26. This is a rural district. And while our area has historically been seen as a Republican stronghold, this is simply no longer the case. A near even number of registered voters from both parties now live in our area, and the voice of independent and non-affiliated voters is critically important. I'm the candidate with the best track record of bridge building and working across the political spectrum. I'm committed to representing all people in my district. I show that through my involvement in public safety, the military, business, and agriculture. We all want responsible legislation and civility. In this race, your vote and involvement really matter. Join us at masonfororegon.com. Paid for by Mason for Oregon 21968.
Okay, well, we are here at Aurora Fire Station, and with a couple of guys, why don't you introduce yourselves?
Yeah, sure. I'm Josh Williams. I'm the fire chief.
And chief?
Mike Corliss. I'm the assistant chief.
Hey, assistant chief.
Bill Hansen. I'm the lieutenant.
Lieutenant Hansen. You guys had me out a few years ago in February of 2020 for some really cool stuff. You kind of showed me some
cut
of your new equipment.
Up.
Yeah, cut cars up. It was really fun. And then since then, it's just been just disaster after disaster. We've obviously talked, but it's been wildfires and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
So we just wanted to come by and just kind of been some really positive things, even throughout the disasters, but recently as well. And just wanted to kind of update folks on what's happening here at Aurora Fire.
Right, yeah. So we had the, of course, we're still dealing with the pandemic, but we went through that. We had the fires. We've came out of that fairly unscathed. Yeah,
yeah,
the ice storm. So we've dealt with it all, just like all of our neighbors have. Yes, yes. And we've done well. It's certainly been a challenge.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're doing pretty good. Now we're halfway through summer and getting ready for what's next.
Have you seen the way that, you know, in some ways these disasters, sort of the silver lining of them is it really kind of brought people together in the community and whatnot? Have you seen with the fire service, you know, kind of some camaraderie that's been built? Obviously, you already had that, but that
right.
It's really kind of pulled you together.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, specifically to the wildfires, that was so devastating for so many parts of the state that communities really had no choice but to pull together.
Yeah.
I think you can recall what happened here at Aurora, where
yeah.
this was really a big distribution center for donations. So
you guys were on the leading edge of it. I mean, you were like the last, the closest that wasn't in it.
Yeah, we were the closest to the metro area
yeah.
that people can get to off I-5 to drop things off.
Yeah.
And just far enough removed from the firefighting that, you know, this was a good, safe location. So
yeah.
Chief Corliss was up at the fires and in the operations center. So this was the spot for people to bring the donations. We had Colton Fire actually relocate from their station
right.
over here. So, you know, that brought a special bond with us and Colton Fire.
Yeah.
And so, you know, since then we've communicated and visited each other's stations. So that's been fun. And then just the community itself, whether it's the ice storm or the wildfires, I think that what has happened is people have realized the importance of being sufficient
yeah.
and to at least have some basics at their homes
yeah.
So that they can deal with power outages or if they're out of water, you know, we all take for granted every morning we get up and turn on the faucet and it's always there.
Yeah.
But when you get up and you can't turn it on and nothing's there, then things really change quickly.
Yeah.
So I think that's been a positive for people to realize that they could, every time you go to the grocery store, you can grab an extra bottle of water,
right.
you know, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
So that's been a positive.
Yeah.
And then, of
Absolutely.
Course, you know, the fire service in general is a close community, but I think that these larger events really bring people together because we all have our stories. You know, a lot of us went to places we've never been to before, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. so the fire service is a pretty small organization.
Yeah.
So, you know, we get to reconnect with each other on that, so it's kind of interesting. But
yeah,
these guys were also dealing with this, and may give a different perspective.
No, I think you nailed it on the head. The fires really brought agencies together that have kind of worked together,
yeah,
but not really.
We're like aware of
yeah,
each other.
Yeah, didn't really know each other, and,
yeah.
and the fires really solidified that. I think in the Clackamas Marion County Fire Service, we became a lot closer
yeah.
than we were before. We were a lot of individual departments doing our own thing, and yeah, we'd call you if you reach you late every now and again. But with the fires, we all had to work together, and we all had to learn
yeah.
Different things. And then we went right from the fires right into the ice storm, which continued that to build on that. And there's some good things coming out of those relationships. You know, there's mutual aid and other things, other trainings that are going on now that maybe wouldn't have happened without doing that. So.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be a real asset going forward because unfortunately, mm-hmm. you know, something
yeah.
will happen again. Some,
oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's what is the next disaster,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know,
like,
what
well,
is the next natural disaster?
Yet.
Well,
zombies.
Yeah, zombies, you know, another 96 flood or whatever, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, earthquake.
Yeah.
Let's
yeah.
talk about that. Mm-hmm. That will probably happen at some point.
So. I mean, that's the nature of our business, right? I mean, there's always going to be something.
Yeah.
The next thing is always coming. You know, if we've been slow for a few months and haven't had a fire, we know it's coming.
Yeah.
Because it always does.
Yeah.
So I think it just led to better preparation for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, we made some changes, you know, since those fires, and I would venture to guess that every agency that participated in those fires have made changes.
Yeah.
So, so these disasters can bring about good things. One of those good things was the state of Oregon has really stepped up with their Senate Bill 762, and that allowed for funding from the state. And that leads me to one of the things that I asked you to come here for was staffing.
Yeah.
So Aurora Fire applied for a $35,000 staffing grant.
Yeah.
And we received that. And so we have hired 3 full-time temporary employees plus 1 fill-in type position.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an upstaffing between basically July through October.
Okay.
So during the peak summer months, you know, we now have 3 extra employees that we have on staff.
Yeah.
And
a lot of folks probably don't realize that Aurora Fire is primarily volunteers.
Volunteer. We have a very small staff.
Yeah.
And so I've got 2 career people on my engine 24 hours a day. Mm. Sometimes that is a struggle.
Yeah.
Because 2 people, you know, there's a lot of work on a lot of
Aurora's
calls.
A small town, but Aurora Fire District is
right.
huge, and you got the interstate.
Yeah, and so to explain that, a lot of people look at Aurora Fire, and they think of Aurora, right?
Yeah.
And
don't need that many people.
No, yeah. we go far beyond that. We go west to Donald and Shampooey State Park.
Yeah.
We cover from the Boone Bridge down to the Woodburn Truck Scales.
Yeah.
So we have a 64-square-mile district, so there's a lot of things happening. We've got the airport, the interstate, the railroads, you name it, we've got it.
Yeah.
So a lot of activity going on, but this grant's really going to help us primarily get that second unit out to get us on scene faster with more people to make that fire, contain that small fire into a small spot.
And you said the summer is a busier time for you guys? You get more calls?
Generally.
Yeah.
It's busier. Okay. Fire-wise, for sure.
Yeah.
We're pretty busy year-round, but we'll see an uptick in traffic crashes and, heat-related emergencies. It's been obviously hot. We've had a few heat-related issues already.
Yeah.
We cover the rest areas off I-5. That keeps us pretty busy. So it's made a big impact that we've got some of those employees here that you can chat with and show you what's going on.
Awesome.
Yeah. What else?
You,
the Spire grant. Yeah, we're gonna talk about the
new vehicle.
Got a new vehicle. We applied for this vehicle in 2018.
Yeah,
we just got it.
So, that quick, huh?
That quick. Yeah. So I do not want to say that it's, you know, we're upset about that. Oh, we are super happy to have this vehicle.
Yeah, yeah.
It did take a long, but I also understand that between the time that it was ordered, which would have been 19 or so, and now there's been a lot of world changes, right?
Yeah.
So, so we're okay with that. At the end of the day, it's sitting at our fire station, and we're getting that unit ready for summer.
So what is it?
It is a, think of an Isuzu, you know, like a cab over type Isuzu with a long bed on it.
Yeah.
And 4-wheel drive that will climb up a tree. It will go anywhere we need it. It was designed and presented as a grant for fire agencies that it could be a high axle rescue vehicle.
Okay.
So thinking about the floods in 96, where this unit can go around anywhere in the state if it was called and go rescue people from high water.
Mm-hmm.
It will also help in snow. So those emergencies that may be may not occur here, but somewhere else within the region.
Yeah.
These are kind of staged in areas that Aurora Fire has one. The state knows it now.
Yeah.
And hey, we may need some assistance in Gresham or wherever, maybe in the state, we could take it and go.
When it's those mutual aid assists for the vehicle that's part of this fire grant program, do you send it with Aurora folks?
So
you continue to staff as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime an Aurora Fire vehicle leaves, it'll have Aurora Fire operating it.
Yeah. I didn't know if it's like, you know, I take the keys, I'll gas it up before I drop it off.
No. The way this unit's designed is we can essentially take the tank off and put it on the ground, and then put benches on the bed.
Yeah.
It's a process, for sure, but it's something that we could do, you know. I mean, if we... It's not like floods just happen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, generally, we know things, you know. So one of those deals where if it looks like it's a flooding thing, then we can start that process because we don't do a lot of brush fires in January, right?
Yeah.
So we can take that off and put on the benches and get ready for some sort of a water rescue.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Has it
been used yet for?
No, we have not. It hasn't gone into service yet.
Okay.
We're probably another week out, maybe even less, actually.
We're probably a little less than a week out.
Yeah.
It's actually going to have its first action on Friday. We're going to do some training down on Woodburn Fire.
Nice.
In the wildland realm. So it'll actually have its first experience, if you will,
yeah,
in the wildland then. But then it'll be in service here as kind of a reserve brush engine. And then as we get more stuff for it, because it's still missing compartments and stuff like that, once we get the compartments on it, then we will supplement, we'll add it to our fleet, we'll rearrange our fleet, bring another piece from here over to Donald to give them a little newer piece of equipment, and then take that older piece of equipment to be our reserve.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So we'll end up having three of the engines that are basically the same type.
Yeah.
All brush engines. So.
Yeah. And it's a flood situation is primarily where there's, you know, deep water or roads and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
it can go into
a lot of times these boats and stuff.
Yeah, it can go into water up to 3 feet.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it's not
again,
aquatic. Yeah.
No, right. It will not. It's not an amphibious vehicle or anything like that. But it can go in water into 3 feet. It's for those 96 floods where you have an area like, you know, in our fire district, Anderson Road.
That's
where
supposed to be dry, but it's
right. Yeah. Where we can drive down there and we can rescue any of the residents that are there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, one of the other uses that we will, we've had it, and this hasn't occurred while I've been here, but I know in the past that, you know, with snowstorms on the interstate, where there's been people that have had abandoned vehicles.
Yeah.
So we can get to people. And historically, fire district has taken folks to, say, the truck stop, and maybe you can speak to that. You've had some of those calls here.
Yeah, people tend to try to make it out in the snow, and then they end up getting stuck out between the exits and just needing somebody to give them a ride.
Yeah.
Either pull over to chain up, don't have the proper equipment, or they just can't go any further because they failed to prepare.
Yeah.
So we'll go out there, and we usually take the four-wheel drive pickups and the brush rigs and try to reach these folks, make sure that they're okay, help them with their chains if they need some assistance.
Yeah.
To get them off the road, and then if not, then we have a few extra seats that we can put them in and take them to the truck stop to get them to a warm place to like get somebody to come get them.
Yeah, transport them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I just think that 3 feet is pretty deep. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. No normal vehicle could do that for sure.
No. Gosh, no.
Yeah. The last thing, Chief, that you had mentioned in your email to me was another grant from the state for building of a new station.
Yeah, this is the big one for us.
Yeah.
So I think I went through 5 rounds of writing letters to the state and the federal government and just pounding and pounding and pounding about trying to get some money.
Yeah.
And finally, I after my... Looks like our trailer just pulled up.
I just saw the reflection.
Did you? Finally, after the 5th round, I got a phone call from Senator Girod's office.
Oh, awesome.
And as it turns out, back in the 90s, I used to teach Girod CPR, him in his office.
Yeah.
He was a dentist back in Staten.
Yeah.
Now he's a state senator. And he said, "What do you need?" And I explained the need for Aurora Fire. And really worked with him a lot. And he also got the Senator Kennemer from Clackamas County involved.
Yeah.
And went through some different hearings with the state on the last session, and we were appropriated $3.8 million from the state of Oregon, and that is to build a new fire station.
Wow.
So we are in that process now of trying to get some bids and get some ideas of what we're going to spend. Unfortunately, we got the money at the point in the world where the costs are... outrageous. I mean, we're looking $600 to $700 per square foot, and that's unheard of. You know, we should not ever have to build a fire station for that much money.
Yeah,
but that's the world we're in right now.
Yeah,
So we're excited. We already own 10 acres out on Ellen Road.
Yeah. Just is that east, where you're looking to build it?
Yep, just east of the freeway.
Yeah.
And we'll put it out there.
He's at training now. I see the sign.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the intention was always to put a station there. This will be a third fire station.
Yeah.
This is not replacing anything.
Okay.
So Aurora and Donald will still remain open fire stations.
Yeah.
But we'll enhance the district with that third one.
Yeah. Will this still be the main one here in Aurora?
No. Administration and the main station will shift over. And the primary reason for that is right now these career guys they sleep at the house next door.
Yeah.
And so if there's a call in Donald or Shampoo State Park, you know, there's a lot of distance between those two points, right?
Yeah.
So at Ellen Road, that's essentially right in the center of the fire district.
Hey Tyler, read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome, what's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting though, who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something, Sass, Sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local, independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read. Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
Those of us who call this area home know there's just something special about the Clackamas County Fair. Maybe it's the livestock and agricultural displays where the farmers and youngsters who toil all year to work the land and feed our country showcase the fruits of their labor. Maybe it's the food. Hey, where else can you feast on a foot-long hand-dipped corn dog and a pile of ribbon fries the size of Mount Hood? And for dessert, homemade sour cream and raisin pie? A chocolate and vanilla swirl cone from the Dairy Women Red Barn, or for the purist, the one and only elephant ear. Maybe it's the long nights on the Midway, or the unmatched thrill of man against nature in the Canby Rodeo, or the inspired performances of musicians and entertainers playing for their favorite hometown crowd. Or maybe it's that sense you get as soon as you step foot onto the historic Clackamas County Fairgrounds and you realize we do things a little differently here, and are willing to work a little harder to preserve the things we love. Whatever it is, the Clackamas County Fair has got it, and in spades. Come see everything a county fair was meant to be, only in Canby, August 16th through the 20th. Tickets on sale now at clackamascountyfair.com or on the new Clackamas County Fair app on Google Play or the Apple App Store.
What percentage of your calls are interstate?
I don't know the percentage, but a significant amount are on the interstate.
I would say the majority of your sort of like serious crashes and like more serious calls are probably interstate.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
As far as car accidents, majority are on the interstate.
Medical calls or whatnot, for heart stuff.
Yeah, we had two medicals on the freeway yesterday, and we get a lot at the rest areas. Mm. So
yeah.
I-5 is a significant amount of calls for us, for sure. And we'll be, quarter of a mile from the freeway.
So your email chief, you accidentally missed a zero on the end of the number. So it was 3,800 and then another comma, but just 2 zeros. So I read it as a period. So I thought you were saying that you got a grant for $3,800.
Oh, how exciting.
To build a new station, that's like, yeah. That's,
you're like, wow.
Okay, big whoop. Freaking cheap state of Oregon.
No $3,800.
So yeah, but $3.8 million. That is very impressive. Yeah. Very.
You see what happens when you miss a zero. Just takes one zero.
Why couldn't they just add it to zero?
Yeah, no kidding.
See, that would be helpful. Yeah, I read
the
it.
The state would have added zero. That would have been better.
$3,800 grant from the state.
I'm sure he's going $3,800.
Why is he so excited about that?
Like, who cares, man?
Yeah, $3.8 million.
Yeah.
So that changes things. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
$3,800. That won't even get us a door.
We can paint one room.
Right. Yeah. So $3.8 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a different story, right?
Yeah, no, that's very significant. Greatly appreciate the senators who helped make that happen. That's awesome.
No doubt about it. Yeah, we're really excited about that. We are hoping to have some really firm information to make a decision on that mid-August.
Yeah.
We've researched a certain fire station over here. Now we're researching this one. And we're looking at having the comparisons here in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
And we want to break ground as soon as we can.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Have you reached out to other fire districts? Like Canby Fire just built a medical kind of station, but pretty robust.
Yeah. So we've reached out to some neighbors, and the problem is we're just every day the costs go up. And we're looking for, a more... So the Canby station is a great station. That's, that there's no administration there. It's just small staff.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at more of a administrative building where the career and the staff will be at the administration. So a little bit bigger, but those give us really good ideas of.
I mean, more like tips for maybe doing it cheaply. Oh, yeah. I know they got some.
Yeah.
They cut corners, but you know what I mean? They were able to save money in some places.
Value engineering. Yes. Yes. Chief Corliss has a lot of experience with building fire stations.
Perfect.
You may not know his background. I'll let him explain that to you, but we picked him up from Clackamas County. He had retired, and so he's a. Former operations chief with Clackamas County Fire, and has built several fire stations. So,
well, they only have like 1,000 of them.
Right.
Well, it's Clackamas Fire District 1, which is 200 and some square miles.
Yeah.
But,
it's like 40 stations. Or
23.
Okay. Yeah.
But I had the opportunity to build two new stations. So the Hilltop Station in Oregon City and then the Damascus Station.
Oh, cool.
They're sisters. They're basically the same footprint, just sites were a little different. But
if you want,
those were
make sure
that's larger. Okay. Than what we're Thank building you. As far as square feet.
Yeah.
And they were both, and this was years ago, $7.3 million.
Yeah.
So, and then I was also a part of building the Fleet Logistics building there. So, yes, value engineering, making some of those tough decisions. Yeah. I'm glad to be here helping and working through this process because I've been through it before, and the first time I was learning.
Yeah.
And now I'm still going to learn because you learn through every process you go through like this, but at least I'll have some base knowledge to go. Now we don't need that. And just looking at some of the plans that we've looked at already, and we've actually talked to other agencies from outside of this area saying, if you do this, you probably don't need to do this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't think about that. Yeah. So we're looking at every way to stretch that $3.8 million to get the best bang for our buck for the community.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Awesome. Speaking of the community, this has been, like you mentioned, Chief, in the works for a long time. It's been a need for a long time.
Yeah.
There's been, conversation with the community over the years, a bond proposal at one point. What has that looked like? Have you been having those conversations with folks? Are they, obviously we have grant money now to help with that.
But, yeah.
Are you feeling like folks are, understanding now really of the need and are more on board maybe than maybe they might have been in the past or?
We haven't really discussed the possibility of going out for a bond.
Yeah.
We've discussed what it could do for us for sure. The tricky part that we have to deal with as chiefs is we need people or things.
Yeah.
We need them both, right? Yeah. But what do we need worse?
Yeah.
And here 3 years ago, 2019 actually, we did the bond or the levy for people.
Yeah.
And that was the first bond or a levy that had passed specifically to hire. And so we went to 24-hour crews.
Yeah.
Aurora Fire had never had 24-hour staff, and we do now. Right. And we can't go back from that. We are too busy. We cannot be... we cannot lose these folks.
Yeah.
So my emphasis is going to be continuing that levy, because by Oregon law, we can only do this every 5 years.
Right.
Which, you know, whatever opinion you've got, our people, if they want these folks, they're going to have to vote for them again. And I think the voters told us loud and clear that they wanted that.
Yeah.
Now, they passed it with a pretty good margin. I want to say we're at 63%.
Yeah.
Which is good, because not a lot of people vote, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So my emphasis is going to be making sure that those people still are employed.
Yeah.
And we will go out probably next year for that renewal.
Yeah.
And I would anticipate that we'll need to look at an increase, because the fact of the matter is, what we paid 2, 3, 4 years ago is not what we're paying now.
Yeah.
And I'm talking from paper to people.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll go out and keep that up. I'd love to do a bond, of course. I'd love to get a new fire station. But I also worry about the amount of money that people can pay.
Sure.
And there's a lot of emphasis on government and wasteful spending, and what I don't like as a chief is I feel that the fire districts are some of the most efficient places, because we get money on an annual basis in November from taxes.
Yeah.
Okay. I have X amount of money, and that's it. So I run this district like I run my budget, or you would run your home. You get paid a certain amount of money. That's what you deal with.
Yeah.
That's how the fire district runs.
Yeah.
So we don't have opportunity to do new taxes or new fees or to print money.
Yeah.
So we're really efficient. And so we try to run things as efficient as possible, so that the next time we do need that bond, they can look at us and go, you know what? They respect our money,
yeah,
and so they understand that. So right now we're hoping we can get that fire station with the money that we have, so that we can concentrate on the people.
Yeah.
Yeah. With that being said, we do need engines eventually. We
yeah.
do need water tenders. And so these things are going to have to come. And as much as I don't want to necessarily go out and ask for it, it's going to be the people's decision.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to make that decision, not me.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, to me, it's a matter of, and we've kind of been talking about it, but just sort of allocating the and kind of spreading out the district in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, when it was first established 100 years ago,
right,
or whatnot, it made sense to be just in Aurora.
Sure.
You know, that's where the people were. Just
yeah.
in Donald, that's where the people were. But now it's this huge area, like we
yeah.
said, and it's all spread out.
Right.
And a lot of the calls and a lot of the needs aren't in Aurora and aren't in Donald.
Right.
You know.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we do, you know, we do certain things such as, you know, we talked about the amount of calls we go on the freeway, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of those people are non-taxpayers.
Yeah.
Okay, so the taxpayers of this fire district have prepared this district with us
yeah.
and our people and the tools that you used to cut up
yeah.
When you came out here. Those aren't
so
cheap.
Cool.
Yeah,
yeah,
those aren't cheap. And so, you know, we do have a program that when we have a car accident, we actually do bill the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do get that reimbursement.
Yeah.
So that does help.
Yeah.
The only people that don't get a bill are the Aurora taxpayers.
Yeah.
So if you crash into an Aurora person, you may pay, but the Aurora person isn't, because they've already paid their taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of agencies. I mean, we're not the only ones doing that. There's a lot of agencies around the area
yeah.
Yeah.
that do that just to try to recoup some of that cost.
Yeah.
Because of the way we're funded.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's for fire and medical?
We basically...
You probably wouldn't respond to a fire call that's not in the district.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we...
Is he still here?
If we respond to mutual aid fire, you know, to Hubbard or to Tualatin Valley or stuff like that. That's just mutual aid. We don't charge for that. But basically, we just narrow it down to motor vehicle accidents. Gotcha. Could we charge for other things? Yeah, we could. We'd have to go through some ordinance process. But we basically just narrow it down to motor vehicle accidents on the interstates.
Yeah.
I should say on the interstates. On basically any road.
Yeah.
If they're Aurora Fire member, district member, they don't get charged if you're out of district. And we don't necessarily charge the individual.
Yeah, insurance.
We build the insurance.
Yeah.
And we go from there.
Yeah.
And we've had a few people call and say, hey, I can't. The insurance has passed this on to me. And the chief has that ability to look at this circumstance and waive it if we need to.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
So, yeah, if you want, I don't know if you have any other questions. I was going to say, but we could go out and take some pictures. And you could talk to, we have two of the three temp hires working today if you wanted to ask them some questions.
Perfect. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or that baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait. Do you know any trivia that isn't, like, animal-related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest-running, locally-owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.